The Blue Jays' home run power finally comes back as we win 2 out of 3 against the Atlanta Braves. Let's get into it. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Wednesday, April 16th, and welcome to episode 247 of Buds and Blue Jays. It's your place for all things related to the Toronto Blue Jays. Jesse Burrell here, joined as always by Jesse Tricio. And Jesse, it felt so good to be back home on our turf. I wish the dome was open, but we're not quite there yet. But being back home cooking, being able to see our Toronto Blue Jays, and even better, Jesse, the bats came alive, and we took 2 out of 3 against the Atlanta Braves. What's up, my man? How are you feeling after this series?
Oh, it feels good. I had to put on the muscle shirt and flex some muscles because the Jays were definitely doing that with their bats. It was great to see that. Great to see our top three actually coming alive. And again, our pitching has been carrying us and really carried us 2 of the 3 games.
Yeah, it was wild. And I think when you look at the series, game one was the dud, and we'll get into that. But even Miles Straw hit a home run. So, like, it's added to the group of, like, we're getting home run from, like, our Tyler Heinemans, our Miles Straw, but our big boys really haven't been doing it until soon. Alan Roden got his first of the big leagues career, so congrats to Alan Roden. We'll touch on that a little later in this episode. Santander got his first in front of the Blue Jays home crowd, and probably most importantly, Jesse, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. finally went yard. And you could even see him in the dugout after the home run saying, like, about effing time, you know, I'm glad we finally got that done. So very happy to see that. Just good vibes all around after winning this 3-game series.
Oh, definitely. And I always say, when even if you lose the first series, just win that last one, vibes are high for the next series, especially going into an off day.
Yeah, baseball is kind of wild because when we looked at this series coming into it, we thought, all right, well, we should be able to tee off on Grant Holmes. No, he looked the best he ever did, pitched into the 8th inning. And then we're like, oh, crap, Spencer Schwellenbach's been one of the best pitchers in all of baseball throughout the course of the early part of the season. And then Spencer Strider, we know how good he can be, even if it's first game back. Well, baseball's weird. We'll lose against Grant Holmes, and then we'll win the games against Schwellenbach and Spencer Strider. Just how we drew it up, I suppose, eh?
Oh, definitely. That was their plan all along.
Right where we want them. All right. I love that. Let's get into the recaps here. Game one, as mentioned, Atlanta beat the Jays 8-4. Atlanta got up to an 8-0 lead. Easton Lucas got shelled in this one. And then the Jays did kind of make a comeback, but too little too late as they fall in that one. Game two, the Blue Jays won 6-3. Kevin Gausman dealt quite well in this one. We got our first 3-run home run of the season and our first home run with men in scoring position, and also the Blue Jays' first multi-home run game of the season with them in Roden, and they win 6-3. And in game three that just finished up here, the Blue Jays win this game 3-1. Chris Bassitt was excellent. The Blue Jays pitchers as a whole were excellent in this one. Vlad got a home run, also had an RBI single in this one, and Bo Bichette had an RBI late. So after the game, the Blue Jays are 11-8. We are tied with the New York Yankees, although I think we have them ahead on percentage points, but the Yankees do play tonight for first in the AL East. And coming into the game, our playoff odds stuck at 45.4% after this series. Jesse, lots of great talking points coming out of this series. Hit me with your player of the series.
Well, I gotta say, the dogs are out for the hound on the mound. Like, what a performance. 5 innings, 10K, bringing his season ERA to 0.70. Like,
wow.
If you told me that at the beginning of the year, like, this is what the best we're going at, I would say you're full of it. But no, he's been dominant all year and really showing, like, he really fixed what was playing him last year. And he had 10Ks in 5 innings. Like, I don't think me and you would ever think that in the last 2 seasons he would have 5 innings with 10Ks.
Yeah, I'm going to try to look it up here. I think this might be Chris Bassitt's most as a Blue Jay. I'd have to go back into the memory bank to see how many strikeouts he's had in an outing. I'll look that up when we get some time here. But phenomenal, Jesse. I did not think Chris Bassitt had this in him. I remember I've mentioned all offseason and all last season that Chris Bassitt's command had kind of gone off him. And for a guy who never really has the overwhelming fastball velocity, a guy who relies on throwing 6, 7, 8 pitches, if that command's gone, then you are in big trouble. And boy, Jesse, he's got it back. If you look at the pitch chart of the game today of where his locations were, he was dotting the corners. I don't know if I've ever seen a location that dominant from Chris Bassitt. He is locked in and absolutely dealing. And this might be the best he has ever looked early in the season. Thoroughly impressed and is he's got to be the best Blue Jays starting pitcher so far this season, correct?
Oh, definitely is. And like, if I remember too, a couple of years ago, he won a complete game against the same Braves when they were last time they were in Toronto. But like,
yes,
I don't know, maybe he has the Braves numbers, but like this top pitching performance was just a chef's kiss.
Yeah, and just looking at his baseball reference page, if you just pull it up right now, coming into the game today, before he went five shutout innings with three hits and 10 strikeouts, he was leading baseball in FIP. 122 FIP is absolutely insane for a pitcher, and he has yet to give up a home run this year. They probably go hand in hand, but Chris Bassitt, we know, has had homer issues at times, especially in his first 2 years in Toronto, yet to give up a big fly this year. I am in awe from what I've seen from Chris Bassitt.
Well, you and me both, but I'll take him as long as it lasts.
So he is very likely our player of the series, but I do want to throw some love here to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who our series did start with a press conference. You know, he gets up there. He's there with Ross. He's there with Mark. He's there with Edward Rogers, who is probably the first time I think I've ever heard that man speak in public in my life. He was wearing a very nice, I think, cherry blossom blazer. I thought Vladdy looked pretty sharp. Oh, big contract.
I want there. That suit.
Don't we all, eh? Look sharp. Look sharp for the kid. And then he went out on the field and he performed. Game one, 0-for-4, but he did have two rockets. And it just kind of feels now that this contract stuff is behind him. You know, he's got his money. He can get out and perform. And I want to walk you through the at-bat he had today against Spencer Strider, where he hit that home run. He fell behind 0-2 off two very tough sliders from Spencer Strider. Then he spit on one that went in the dirt. Took a fastball in off his hands, fouled off a two more tight fastballs up in the zone, up and in, that were very good pitches. And then he put a slider just a little bit too high, and Vladdy roped it into the second deck. I like what I'm seeing from Vladdy. This homerless streak, if you go back to the last seven games of last year, was the second longest homerless streak of his career. But I'd bet you going forward that we're about to see that binge from Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Oh, definitely. And like, even like, going back to the game again, when he faced Schlobuck in game two, when he fouled that pitch off his foot, I was like, they scared the living shit out of me.
Yeah.
But when I saw him do that little wiggle after the ball, like he didn't say, yeah, I'm like, all right, he's locked in, game over. And we didn't get the homer yesterday, but like from that little wiggle, I was like, he's himself, the pressure's gone, he's ready to go on fire. And today, two RBIs with a homer, like, can't go wrong.
Yeah, he's having fun, and he's seeing the ball quite well. Now, on top of that, too, three walks in the series for Vlad, two yesterday, one here again today. And Mark Shapiro even said in the press conference that he had before here that showing joy and having fun on the field is like a certain type of leadership. Like, you and I both know how long of this season can be, the grind can be. And if Vladdy is still out there having fun, which we saw from his little wiggle, it's going to go a long way to loosening up this clubhouse and getting up there. And I know sometimes that rubs people the wrong way, but I think you and I are in the camp of more like, we like to see these players having fun. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been doing just that.
Oh, definitely. I love seeing them have fun, but also I love, like, I want to make sure they know, like, it's all fun and games, but also when it matters, like, game face is on.
Get the job done, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was doing just that in this series. All right, Jesse. Do you want to go to the mound? Do you want to go to the bats? Where do you want to start first here with some notable performances?
Let's go with the bats because they actually came alive this series.
Okay, yes. I have this broken down into the good, the bad. And I was going to say the ugly, but the bad and the ugly are kind of hand in hand here. So we'll start with some positive performances we saw in the season. And Jesse, I know you want to talk about Alan Rodon hitting his first home run in the big leagues. What did you see from Alan Rodon in this series, especially from that home run he hit?
Oh, definitely shows his maturity as a batter, like as a player too. Like, he already made in-season adjustments to what he's been seeing. Mm-hmm. He's playing, like, two of his hits yesterday were like two of his hardest hits all year. And like, of course, he gets his first career home run off of no such of a pitcher of Schlobuck. Like, he sat on that cutter. Well, what they say about a cutter, if a cutter doesn't cut, it's a BP fastball, but even though I don't think me and you could hit it if we were playing there, but just seeing that swing, the power, and like just the poise too, like, and then even today when like they were saying when he gets hit by a pitch, he just takes it and doesn't even react. Yeah. Like,
those hurt. Those have got hurt.
Oh, definitely. He just especially off of Spencer Quantzill, Spencer Strider, like that definitely was stung. And like we were ranting about how good he was in spring, and like yes, he isn't the like what tearing the model off the cover like people thought he would, but he's a rookie. But he's really coming into it, and like that's how I saw it too. He's sixth among all rookies with in OBP, so like he's doing his job.
Yeah, he's doing okay, and especially he's getting through those early struggles too. We've seen a lot of rookies come into the big leagues and struggle to adjust, and if this is the adjustment period for Alan Roden, I think it's okay too. And if anything, Jesse, I think he's showing faith in John Schneider as manager. They've had Alan Roden. They finally moved him out of the ninth spot. I think he was hitting sixth in at least two of these games in the series, and maybe even the third as well. So the fact that John Schneider is trusting this guy to move him up in the order to be in a more productive spot has got to be a good sign here. I think we're almost all systems go here for Alan Roden. I don't want to get too high because I know there are a lot of people out there who really love what we're seeing, but I still think he looks like he belongs here. If that home run power is starting to come, if he can just can get the barrel on the ball a little bit more consistently, which is very much in his skill set, I think we're going to see good things from Alan Roden, and he's going to be set to really break out here soon.
Oh, definitely. And even his double was so like smoked off the bat too, and I believe it was game two. Like I would say, oh hey, there's the flying off. And even when we saw him in the first game of the year, we knew there was something like on his even on his single. Like just give it a matter of time. It's a marathon, not a sprint for a season.
Right.
And like as a rookie, it's like you know, the stock market's up down. But as long as he is performing what we've seen and like not hindering the team, he's here to stay.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I don't think there's a question. You can't, when Dalton Varsho comes back and everything is ready here, Nathan Lucas comes back, you still have to plug and that'll be very good. All right, Jesse, I want to talk a little bit here about Miles Straw. I might be having internet issues here, so forgive me if it's cutting out here, but I do want to talk about Miles Straw, who had a very good series here. Jesse, did you know that he is now using a torpedo bat, one of the two Blue Jays on the team to do so?
I didn't realize until I saw in game one when they showed that close-up. I was like, oh. And then right after I saw it, he hits the home run. I'm like, oh, it makes sense.
Yeah. Like, isn't that absolutely wild? Miles Straw gets to the home run party too. And I want to say, that wasn't even the most impressive at-bat I saw from him. It was in game two, actually. And Miles Straw was leading off the inning in the fifth here against Spencer Schwellenbach. And he worked a nine-pitch at-bat, a nine-pitch walk, really battled, got on base. And then that led to, probably helped, Alan Roden, who was on deck, sit up and see all those pitches so then he could hit a home run off of that. That doesn't happen unless Miles Straw works that very impressive at-bat there. So I very much like that, too, from Miles Straw. He also stole a nice base in this series, which I'd really liked. He's been working his walks too. He walked in the game here today. Like Jesse, Miles Straw has a higher WAR than Roki Sasaki this year. So maybe he was the real prize of that whole gem instead of spending all the money for Sasaki. I say that a little tongue in cheek, of course, but absolutely phenomenal. And I'm starting to wonder as we get ready for a Dalton Varsho rehab assignment here, like, I don't think Miles Straw is the one you can take off this team when he's back. I think he's shown enough that he needs to be here and maybe even still playing more.
Oh, exactly. And Varsho will be probably back, I'll say, probably the beginning of May, close to probably when his Gold Glove bobblehead comes out. But Miles Straw's here to stay. No ifs, ands, or buts. Same as Roden. So like, there's only two players I feel like that will be off the roster when Varsho is back and all that, and it's going to be Nathan Lucas and David Schreiber. They both are going to be off the roster because Barger's here to stay.
You think so? Okay, so let's get into Addison Barger because I did want to make that note. He was the one who was called up when Nathan Lucas was sent to the paternity leave. He had been hitting quite well in Buffalo, cold weather in Buffalo too, might I add. And then he came up here and the results didn't look so great. 0 for 7, 2 strikeouts. What did you see from Barger, though, in this series that that got you there?
Well, firstly, it's his first first two games in the major league. So he's obviously pitching in the majors is way different than it is in any of the minor systems. So he he did look like he didn't look as fidgety in the box as he did last season, which I took a notice in the two games. And one of his outs today was a deep, like 390-foot fly ball to dead center, and he and it was not even because he just missed it. It was more trying to put the ball just in the right spot where he couldn't fully extend and pull the ball, because even if it was like a foot, not even a foot inside, he would have pulled it and gone to the gap in right center and probably would have been a home run in that area. So like he literally smoked the ball, and of course it went to the deepest part, unfortunately. And he looked good in the field too. Like the first play he made, coming up to majors, jumping catch and right, and made it look easy. And even down at the farm, they've had him at third. They've had him at short and even left. They've been playing all over. So he's looking good, and like it shows his versatility too. If worst case scenario, where he has to go if they need someone, and he's more of a platoon player in the sense of like versatility compared to David Schneider.
Okay, I like it too. And for a team that kind of needs that thump off the bench that we thought David Schneider was supposed to go, even though Addison Barger is a lefty and David Schneider is a righty, I think I'd rather take my chance with Addison Barger up there. I hope, Jesse, that the Blue Jays do agree with you when that happens. But who knows? We can dive a little bit into that. Jesse, some other positive things on the offensive side. Bo Bichette had a couple more doubles today, if you wanted to touch on him a little bit. Anthony Santander finally went deep. We'll talk about those two because those two are still good. But what would you see from this series from Bo Bichette and Santander that stuck with you?
Bo is looking like Bo, like plain simple. Like, yes, he has hit a homer. Bo's not, he can hit homers, but that's not his forte. But those doubles to the gap, sitting on pitchers, like he's looking like 2023 and earlier Bo Bichette. Like, he is looking like who we know he is. And eventually he's going to come into some home runs. Santander, that home run, oh my god. Awesome. Like, mm-hmm. I was just like, that's the Tony Taters. And like, just even like before, like right when I heard it off the bat on TV, I was like, yep, that's gone. And just seeing it soar, I was like, it just got me so excited. And then now that our top three are actually now getting hot, it's going to start getting a little scary for rest of the American League.
Yeah, today's game particularly was a game that was really fueled by the top three in the order. Bo had a couple hits, had an RBI, scored a run. Vladdy had two RBIs, including his home run. Santander was really good in game two. I think he still had a hit today here, though, too.
A double in the first.
Yeah, there you go. Double in the first for Santander. So this was the first time we really saw the guys at the top of the order heat up. And if these guys can do it, especially against the good pitching, which Atlanta threw at us here, because we're going to get some more good pitching in the Seattle series coming up, it'll be very key to see how we can do going forward. And the Jays are going to need those guys to produce. We can't rely on, as good as like Miles Straw and Tyler Heineman have been over the course of the year, like relying on them to spark your offense isn't going to work out in the long run. So the fact that these top guys can get going and help carry this team a little bit, all good signs for our Blue Jays.
Oh, definitely. As the weather gets warmer, so do their bats.
All right, I love it. Let's talk then about three Blue Jays hitters who have notably been quite cold, Jesse. And I want to get your panic level, your worry level on these three players. But the first one, Jesse, Andrés Giménez, I want to check in on him, who is still hitting cleanup for this team. 0-for-12 in this series. Not a good look for Andrés Giménez. He's definitely cooled off since his hot start. Alejandro Kirk went just a measly 1-for-7 at the plate after Tyler Heineman had a couple RBIs and a double in game one. And then Will Wagner only got into one game. We've kind of seen his playing time drop a little bit. Ernie Clement's been starting a little bit more at third base, even against right-handed pitching. 0-for-3 with a walk in his one game. Those three hitters, Jesse, Wagner, Giménez, and Alejandro Kirk. What's your worry level on these three players?
Not that high, to be honest. Like, Giménez, yes, it was great to see him get those three home runs and be that a surprise, but we knew that wasn't going to last. So am I surprised it's going down? No. Do I think he can kind of find happy medium between it? Yes. And again, it's we're over 20 games in. There's still 140 or so games left. And I'm not too concerned yet. Like, it's still early. he'll find it again. Like, again, look at the quality pitching we have faced the last little few series. Have been pretty good, so, like, it's, I'm not too concerned. Wagner is probably more that there's more of a bucket on him, and he's just can't find that, like, isn't able to adjust, like, how Alan Rowan has been adjusting recently. And then, yeah, like, Kirk is Kirk. Like, we paid him. He's here. I can't really have any emotions.
Right. He did come off his first home run in the Baltimore series here, so maybe back just regressing to the mean a little bit for Alejandro Kirk. Still swinging the bat very hard, and I do think he's going to have a little bit of a run, probably as the season gets on here, but you would like to see a little more from him. My question is then, at what point now do you start taking Andrés Giménez out of the cleanup spot? Because we've mentioned the top three in our orders were really good this series, yet we only scored three runs in the finale. We kind of still feel like we need one more high bat in that top of the order. Maybe it's George Springer, but who only got in as a defensive replacement this series. So maybe it is him when he get up there. But at what point do you start moving Kirk and Giménez down this lineup?
I feel like Giménez and Kirk are there right now until Varsho comes back, and then they're going to probably start tinkering and seeing. Maybe it'll be if Barger starts getting hot, could be Barger there, or could be Springer there if his wrist is good. Like, there's still a possibility, or there could be someone that from the minors could be coming up that who hit matches that could be coming up too. Namor Elvis Martinez, like, who knows? Or there could be, like, possible trade of, say, a Nathan Lucas or even Dave Schneider to bring in someone, like, to fill that spot.
Yeah, you never know, right? The Blue Jays have been kind of – I think what they're doing right now is the fact that it is working. We are winning games. They don't really want to mess with it too much, right? So until it really becomes a glaring need, John Schneider might just kind of let everyone play in the roles and go through there, which I think is good. Overall, though, they scored enough runs to win two out of these three games, and I hope they can do more against some tough Seattle pitching coming up this weekend. Jesse, let's talk starting pitching. And we got two great starts and one bad start in this series, with Gausman and Bassett being really good, Easton Lucas struggling. Jesse, which one do you want to talk about before we touch on the other ones?
I'll rip the band-aid off and take the bad one with Easton Lucas. Of course, you're in the stadium where I text you. You can't be going to the games now, because the last game here, there was opening day, and the same thing kind of happened where they just teed off, and Austin Riley could screw off there. Yes, his first two starts were phenomenal. Like, first few starts were phenomenal. I think it's just more him, like, coming, like, again, he was on such a high, almost coming back to a normal. Yes, it looked ugly. Mm-hmm. But he still gave us length and competed. That's what you need from your fifth starter, just because you don't want to tax your bullpen first game of the series. He was able to go five strong. We didn't have to use Garcia, Hoffman, any of our main, like, keys. All we really used was Jacob Barnes, who actually survived. And Yariel Rodriguez, like, it could have been way worse. And, he did, like, yes, the numbers don't look good, but, like, again, it's the Atlanta Braves. They're 2 years off of being one of the best offenses. It's a matter of time that they start heating up. Yeah, they teed off Easton Lucas, but thankfully we had Gausman and Bassett to cool their bats down.
Yeah, it was command was the biggest problem for Easton Lucas here. There are two ways a pitcher can miss. You can miss in the zone, leaving pitches right down the middle, which he did a few times, that Sean Murphy one in particular. Dead center. And then even the Austin Riley one, I thought some pretty decent pitches there, but Austin Riley is a very good hitter that ended up taking him yard. And then also four walks for Easton Lucas. Like, he was missing in the zone and out of the zone, which cannot happen. I agree with you on the length, giving you the five innings, which was nice. He did have two scoreless innings out of the five he pitched, but I don't know. Like, remember, Easton Lucas before his last two starts was a guy who had a career ERA of like 8.5. So, you know, as excited as we got over the first two starts, let's know that this type of thing is still in there. And I'll be very curious to see how he goes. I think he gets the finale against Seattle this weekend, so we'll see how he pitches there. Jesse, Chris Bassett. I know we already touched off him off the top. The 10 strikeouts were amazing. I looked it up. He's had two games where he's had more strikeouts as a Blue Jay, but they were both in his first year here. One was his last start of the season against the Yankees, where he struck out 12 of them. And he also had a 12 strikeout game in six innings against the Giants at home. But that's it. This was the third most highest he's had as a Toronto Blue Jay. Even that shutout against Atlanta, he didn't get to double-digit strikeouts that year. So great stuff from Chris Bassitt. How do you feel about the decision to John Schneider to pull him after five innings today?
I'm totally fine with it. Again, after last start, he had that neck issue. And if you look at on the game, he definitely had something on his neck, you know, because of red it was, and probably still kind of dealing with it. I'd rather them save his innings and not let him pitch through if it's still lingering, and just have him be healthy and not cost us when the games matter. It'll just keep it naked and our bullpen, it's not a bullpen anymore. At least so far this year, And I'm fine with five innings, and you put Sandlin, Burr, and Yammy and Hoffman. I'm fine with that. They were able to get the job done, add more strikeouts to the total, shut the door. Yes, Hoffman gave a home run, but it was more of I'll call it an excuse me home run, because I feel like because of the dimensions, that's why it went out.
I mean, we'll touch on that too. John Schneider muttered very similar comments post-game when he was asked about why he took it off. He's like, I've had my best relievers rested, ready to go. And he even said he trusts this back end of the bullpen so much more to get the job done today. And you talk about that too. Look, Bassitt was at 90 pitches, so it's not unheard of. He did just have a 30-pitch inning the pitch before. Yeah, he could have probably given you one more, but that bullpen's rested. Off day tomorrow. Get out there and let them work. And dude, we have to talk about what Jimmy Garcia did in this game. Are you kidding me? Came in, faced four Jimmy batters, struck out all four of them. That is insane. Even Brandon Little, I'm pretty sure, struck out a few guys. Everybody was striking out guys. The fact that Hoffman only struck out one makes you feel come on, man, what's going on here? Why couldn't you get more? But absolutely dynamite stuff in the back end of this bullpen. And that's not something we've said on this show much over the history for our Toronto Blue Jays stuff.
Oh, no.
Absolutely great.
All you got to say to Chris from Coach's Son, thanks for crossing and giving us back Jimmy Garcia.
Yeah, and we will talk to Chris next episode when he comes on, because we're going to have him join us here, and we will talk all about that going in there. Circling back, Jesse, to Kevin Gausman's performance here. Six innings pitched. He six hits, two earned runs, no walks, six strikeouts. I thought he looked good again. That home run he gave up to Austin Riley was an 11-pitch at-bat. I thought the splitter, it was actually a good pitch, too. Just down, a little low of the zone. He's given up a lot of hits. If you look under the hood, there is still some concerning stuff for Kevin Gausman. He's not getting those whiffs back. The velocity is kind of dipping. He says he's doing the velocity thing on purpose. He can throw it up a little faster when he needs to, or he can command it a little better when he doesn't need to. So take that for what it's worth. But do you have a thought on Kevin Gausman's performance here?
Well, solid performance. And yeah, that homer he gave up to Austin Riley. Austin Riley was reaching for it. It was low in the zone. Austin Riley has power, and he just got enough of it to send it out. And realistically, after I texted you after that, I'm like, can you just screw off? because he was on his, but he settled down and was able to give us six strong, and then we were able to have our bats give him the win.
Mm-hmm. He did his job, right? Came out and battled. Something I noticed that Kevin Gausman actually leads all of baseballs in foul balls against him this year, which could be, you could look at that stat two ways. You can look at it as, okay, guys can't barrel up the baseball against him. They're really tough at doing just that. Or you could look at it as Kevin Gausman isn't getting enough to get the whiffs, to miss these bats completely. What's your thought on Kevin Gausman giving up the most foul balls this year?
I feel like it's guys are just missing it. Because if as long as they're foul and not in play, I'm happy. Realistically, yeah, he's leaving foul balls. It means he's either have them thinking a different pitch now because he's showing a slider and a split with the splitter and fastball, or they're just not knowing what it is, or it's just he has enough deception finally, and he's not tipping it.
Yeah, so it's probably a bit of both. I would like to see that swing and a miss come back just a little bit, but I will say, honestly, not that upset with what I've seen about that for Kevin Gausman going forward. I do think he's going to have a few clunkers here or there throughout the course of the season, but for the most part, positive. I liked what I've seen. Jesse, touching on the bullpen, we talked about Jeff Hoffman and the home run he gave up. We talked Jimmy Garcia. I want to touch on Brandon Little a little bit, and the top lefty out of the bullpen has been a topic we've talked about frequently on this series, whether it's been when Richard Lovelady was here, Mason Fluharty, and Brandon Little a little bit, but he has been striking out a lot of guys. The stuff coming out of his hand does look a little more nasty to me. Jonah Bierenbaum, who we've quoted from this show before, came up with this from the score. He's 91st percentile in his chase percentage. He's in like the top in baseball at getting whiff percentage. Like 55% of the pitches they swing at against Brandon Little are missed, which is wild. And he proceeded to get six whiffs on six swings in his appearance today against the Atlanta, the middle of the order. Brandon Little's stuff just looks better. And I never saw this coming when he was a waiver claim ad from the Cubs. And even when he was effective in stretches last year, the command is the big thing with Little. Like when your stuff is so nasty like that, sometimes it can be tough to pinpoint it where you want. But this stuff is good. And the comparison I'm about to make is going to be off-putting there. But I will say that there is a chance from the left-hand side with the way his stuff moves that there is like some Josh Hader in here. Now, he doesn't throw as hard as Josh Hader. The fastball doesn't move as well as Josh Hader. I get all that. But the movement on the slider, the way the fastball can go and it kind of dips and ducks from one side to another, gives me a positive sign that he could be more of than just your average middle lefty reliever here.
Oh, totally. And like I thought you were gonna say another former Jay, where like with that curveball he has, it reminds me of Brett Cecil. Like that lefty coming out with that curveball, it gives me that Cecil vibe.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Brett Cecil, for as much slack as he took for his time with the Blue Jays, was very, very good in that 2015 run. He used that season to get a big contract with St. Louis, I remember, going into that offseason. So and if that's what we get from Brandon Little going forward, sign me up. It would be very good notes from the pen there. Jesse, anything else on the field that really caught your attention this series before we get to some of the off-field stuff?
No, I think, again, other than game one, it was a loss, but, I still feel like there's more positives other than negatives this whole series for once.
Yeah, Jays were down 8-0 too, and in the second half of that series, we came back and we outscored them 4-0. I mean, garbage time, you're down 8-0, they've already checked out, but also worth noting and paying attention to. All right, off the field, we got to talk a little bit about two Blue Jays who are going on paternity leave, and we've touched on them already. Nathan Lucas is off on paternity leave. It's their second child. They had one. Nathan Lucas should be back with the team here during the Seattle series. Dalton Varshows and his wife, Brooke, are just getting their first child. Actually, they're being induced today, or inducted, as Buzz Dan Shulman said on the broadcast today. So congratulations to the Varshows. He will then be going on a rehab assignment to get some at-bats in, and it seems like he's all good to go here for Dalton Varshows. So we're probably looking at about 2 weeks before we see him. So by the end of the month here, we should get Dalton Varshow back in center field full time. We've kind of already talked about who we want to see off the roster, but I want to talk about Varsho specifically. What are your expectations for him as he gets ready, or what do you want to see from him in this rehab assignment that he's about to go on?
His shoulder is good. Like we know his bat was good. We saw that in the spring, but it's more his shoulder. Like if he has to crash into the wall or make a diamond catch, if he's on base, diving into the save first, if they're trying to pick him off, like just how that shoulder reacts.
Yeah.
Like as long as those are all green, lights green and like checks off, he'll be up. Hopefully he gets his timing back where he can produce like he was in spring. As long as that shoulder just holds up and there's no little twinge and like his arm strength throwing the ball, like trying to get someone at second or home is good, I see him in no time. Like, that shoulder is key.
Yeah, and Dalton Varsho knows one speed, and that's all out all the time. So you know he's going to crash into a wall, crash into something, and you got to see how he recovers. I agree. As long as he can get through this rehab assignment without any setback, you put him in there, you start him in center field every day, you don't even think about it. I have two more things I just wanted to mention before we talk about stuff on the farm. First one, Jeff Hoffman, who has now faced Baltimore and Atlanta, the two teams that failed a physical for him this season. He's faced 17 batters. He's only allowed 3 hits. The home run he gave up today, struck out 8 of them. Looked pretty damn good. He didn't blow any kisses to the Atlanta Braves today, but he still signed, sealed, delivered, got the save in the finale here. And the Blue Jays as a whole now, over the course of their season, they played 6 series. We've won 3 of them, split 2 of them, and the only series we've lost was that sweep against the New York Mets. If this is a trend that can continue for the course of the season, split your series on the road, win your series at home, the Blue Jays are going to be in good shape, man. And on paper, the schedule for the month of April was really tough. We've got Seattle, then Houston, then the Yankees, and then Boston to end this month. Then it does start to light up a little bit. And if we can just hold our own, stay above 500 throughout the course of this month, Jays are going to be in good shape for the rest of the season here.
Oh, definitely. And like, again, it's just like, as long as give us a chance at the dance and we can go far. Like, and realistically, if you look at that, go back to that Mets series, there's really only one game we were really out of. So,
yes.
Like, it could have gone either way. So,
I blame the cold weather for that one, but we're going to get on with that. All right, Jesse, down on the farm. I'll admit, I didn't watch a ton of Buffalo Bisons or New Hampshire Fisher Cats games or anything like that today. I did note the most noteworthy thing I saw here. Jake Bloss struggled again, and he has really not been good since coming over to the Blue Jays farm team. I think 2 2/3 innings pitched, walked a lot of guys. The command was not there. He gave up a couple of hard hit balls. I am starting to move other people past Jake Bloss on the starting rotation thing. Like, if we have a need in the rotation, I think there are a few names I would get to first before I get to Jake Bloss. At what point do you start to get worried about his development here?
I'm going to give it on the weather because it is still freezing in the Northern League and all that. Like, and it's hard to grip the ball. Yep. But if he is like this, probably I'll say by the May 2 for us Canadians and all that, or Memorial Day weekend for the Americans that are listening, then I'll be start getting really concerned. Like, that would be more my breaking point of concern.
Okay, good. So we're not getting too worried yet, but for as many people who are telling me he's a good pitcher, I'm going to use the Moneyball quote, but I'm going to be like, if he's a good pitcher, why isn't he pitching good? You know, I would like to see it a little bit more. But Jesse, there was one pitcher in our farm system that you've said has been pretty good numbers, and I know I'm a fan of. Tell me about that pitcher.
Darrell Watson-Brown, playing high in Vancouver. Jesse's been lights out for them, and even though I was listening to a different podcast, Just Baseball, and they, like, for the show that really hates on the Blue Jays, I don't know why, but most people do, and even our farm system, they cannot talk highly about him. This guy's, like, first year in with high of Vancouver, and he's a name to watch out for, and, like, I feel like if everything goes well, he could possibly, again, like I was saying about Arjun Amala, he could possibly maybe find his way up to Buffalo at some point.
Yeah, he was in the futures game for the Blue Jays last year, if you might remember. Jaron Watts-Brown got in there. I have his stats here. 9 1/3 innings pitch so far this season. Struck out 16 batters, and that 9 1/3 has only given up 2 home runs, only walked 2. that's dominance from a guy in high A Vancouver. So Jaron Watts-Brown, the Blue Jays' 26th ranked prospect, I bet you we see him soar a little bit and could be quickly rising into that Blue Jays pitching depth. Might be the pitcher we talk about the most, kind of the jump that Adam Macko made last season. I think Jaron Watts-Brown is the trendy candidate for that one. All right, Jesse, let's take a look now. Off day tomorrow for the Toronto Blue Jays. So we get a day to rest, get that bullpen, and then we face 3 against the Seattle Mariners. And the probable pitchers for that series is we will have Bowden Francis going game 1, to be determined for Seattle. They do not have a pitcher lined up as of right now. But if I would bet, I would bet on maybe it's Logan Gilbert, it's Emerson Hancock. We know Logan Gilbert's going to get one of those. Game 2, Jose Berríos for us. And then game 3, Easton Lucas. We'll get into that game. How do you think we're going to do? Do you have a series prediction, a player to click? What do you want to see in this series against Seattle?
I want to say we're going to go 2-0-3. Player click will be the $500 million man, because I feel like he's just, now that he's got that off, he's going to be just going to go on like a tear, and rest is history.
I like that play as well. 2-3, I think, is my expectation. Because even if we only take one of these games in the series, it's a 3-3 homestand. I kind of want to see a little bit better. Seattle's been very much underperforming as well. if we can get just enough good pitching from Easton Lucas and Jose Berríos, who's got a couple clunkers under his belt, if they can keep us in the ball games, then we should have a good shot of winning this series. My player to click, Addison Barger. Three righties on the schedule for Seattle in this series. I think it's time. He's had his 0-for-7. He's had his little cup of coffee. Let's see him hit a home run or two this series and really make a statement on the team. So I'm going to go with Addison Barger, which I know you're going to be a fan of too.
Oh, I definitely am. And hopefully that home run jockey can fit him.
I hate to see it pull him over his chest and it looks like the Incredible Hulk and he rips through the home run jacket there. I was at the game, so I couldn't see, but did Miles Straw not wear the home run jacket after his home run on Monday?
No,
I don't think he did.
No, he had it on.
Oh, did he have it on? Okay, good. Good, good, good. It was tough to see from where I was sitting in the ballpark, so that is good. All right, Jesse, that's all I got for this series recap against the Braves. Good to see the Blue Jays take 2 out of 3. Let's hope Kansas City can beat the Yankees tonight, and that way the Blue Jays can end the day in first place, which would be very good.
Oh, definitely.
Jesse, do you have any final thoughts from this series?
Well, since, as you people, if they're watching on YouTube, can see you're a Sens fan. I'm a Leafs fan. So let's do a little bet for this Battle of Ontario playoff series.
I'm all ears. What you got?
The loser of the series has to go full uniform for a Jays game.
I can do that. Full Blue Jays uniform or just any baseball uniform?
Blue Jays.
All right. I'm done. I will do that. I am shaking your hand virtually over the computer right now. We will do that. We'll pick a game later this series. I'll even get the eye black and everything, and we'll go all out for it. It'll be great. Jesse, I love that.
Sounds good. And you'll look good in your uniform.
The Leafs will probably win, but if you know hockey and you know Toronto sports, playoff choking is a very real thing. We'll see. I will say, when I was at the game Monday night, I tried to get a Go Sens Go chant going, and that was not quite popular in the season behind home feet. Shout out to the one girl who gave me a high five. But, you know, that'll be great. Lots of good sports, though, in the area. Ultimately, we're Blue Jays fans first here, so go Jays go, and we'll be back to recap the Mariners series next week.
Thanks, guys, for watching, and
thank you.